Hey, how's it going?
And Michael Hinderocker.
What's up?
Man, you guys had some good weekends. Matt had a double challenge top 8. Michael won over 20 matches of Magic in a row. What a just a good time for you two.
Yeah, Magic's been going pretty well. So it's nice. It's nice to pay some, get paid some dividends.
Magic's like a lot easier when you never lose. I'll put that out there.
Seems sweet. You know what else seems sweet? Is our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at MTG Oasis. Get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 4% off of every order by using the code WITHABIGGOOD. And you know what is good? Is our other sponsor, Edding Gaming. You can get a percentage off by using the code CCMTG10, and that gives us a little bit of a kickback to try and pay for things on the show, like microphones, stuff like that. Something that Michael could use right now.
Well, I don't have anything to say to that besides I will mute myself.
Yeah, we had some technical difficulties earlier. We think we found a workaround a little bit. Hopefully you guys can put up with that for this week. But you know what? Let's talk about hashtag always improving, Matt. Hashtag always improving is the point of the podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. You want to be doing what we can all the time to improve ourselves because that's how we're going to help our listeners. Magic's really hard, Matt. But you seem to find it pretty easy this weekend.
Yeah, I had a pretty good weekend with stuff, and I actually gave some thought to what I did to improve at Magic since this is like the fourth or fifth time we've recorded this podcast.
Yeah, talk about it.
So I had actually I was all set to play a super metagame deck for the challenge this week, and at the last second I actually tested a league with Bridgevine with four main deck Leyline of the Voids because I was very concerned about Dredge after what a hot week it had last week. And I played through a league with it and really, really didn't like the deck and then decided to kind of fall back on something that's a little bit more just in my wheelhouse, I guess. Hollow One's just a deck that I know very well. I know it inside and out and really understand what I'm trying to do in every matchup and decided to go with that one instead. And I think that was a really good decision for myself.
What do you think that means about Modern?
Well, I think that it really speaks to the thing that everybody always says, right? That if you just know a deck very well in Modern, you can do well with it regardless of the format. And I think that's as true as it's ever been.
Okay. Michael, what about you? What did you do to improve at Magic this week?
Just tried to play a lot. Just kind of trying to get ready for the Pro Tour next week. Just trying to get games of Standard in and develop a better understanding of what's beating what and why things are happening.
Yeah. I am doing my best to prepare for an event as well. Not quite as big as a Pro Tour, let's be real. Just trying to prepare for the SCG Vegas. So, Michael, when you prepare for a Pro Tour like this, such a long... What?
It's his seventh Pro Tour, I think.
Was that what you're doing? That's not what I was going to say. Pro Tour number 7. No, I was going to say this is like a long time between Standard and the release and the Pro Tour. Something different from like when you started going to Pro Tours. Do you prefer it this way?
I do, but I think that has more to do with what I like about Magic. I like having sort of an established metagame and trying to pick a spot in a metagame as opposed to trying to build new decks.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I know that I would feel behind going to Pro Tours like this. Like, I don't know that I would ever feel like I was ahead or on the same level.
That's interesting. I think that specifically the Pro Tours being at this point in release makes it better for...
For
the average Magic player.
I think so too. I think that I shouldn't feel that way. But I just don't possibly. I'm never gonna have played as many games with my deck as somebody else's at this point.
So yeah. I think that's definitely true. But my guess is that in a Pro Tour closer to release, it's more just that it's hidden how far behind you are because you haven't even conceived of the decks other people are gonna actually be playing.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, let's move to me, and I think that for me this week, I really focused on that SCG grind. I streamed with Grixis Control. I played helped helped. I don't even know if that's the right word. I was with Matt while he was playing the deck for the challenge. And I've also been watching Reed Duke's coverage of that deck through the GP he played. So that's kind of been my main focus. And then I'm also adopting kind of a new goal to try and win 10 matches with every major deck in Standard, Modern, and Legacy throughout the next year. I want to just try and just win 10 games with the deck, kind of collect my thoughts about it, move on to the next one, and really widen my range in the type of decks that I can play in Magic, or at least that I have a basic understanding of just most of the time.
Yeah, and if you ever want to like have some fun too, you could widen that to Vintage as well.
Yeah, maybe I will. I don't know. We'll see how this goes. Like, I might track it. I'm trying to decide like how stringent I want to be on myself, stuff like that. But it should be a fun one.
Yeah.
Well, let's go on to our next segment. I want to talk about the Patreon really quick. So we don't have any Patreon question this week because we're going to just dive deep into Standard. I want to thank our newest patron. We have our newest patron, Cam. We really appreciate Cam. And I want to thank all of our current patrons. So one of the things that we're doing, as I've said a couple times, is we're going to be adjusting the Patreon. In doing this, we've like really discovered how below market we are on some of our benefits compared to other shows and things like that. And so one of the things we're going to do is change the benefit structure, make it a little bit closer to market, things like that. But we also want to thank all of our current patrons, the people who made it possible for us to get John and Seth on the show. So we're going to lock everybody in for whatever their current benefits are. So if we make something go up, you're locked in for that, benefit. And then we also are adding some new benefits and things like that. So I want to just thank everybody who's donated to the show through Patreon in the past. It's really appreciated. And hopefully we can keep growing and we can add more and more things onto the benefits, and you'll get those as well. So thank you so much. Cool. Well, let's go talk about Standard. So no power rankings this week because the whole show is in power rankings. So I guess there's no training grounds this week, really. Hopefully this will still be a training grounds for us to get better, though, right?
Yeah, definitely. I always really enjoy these episodes because while they might not be as timeless as some other episodes, you really do get a lot of instant gratification out of them. Like,
yeah,
we get to get a lot of information about current Standard.
Yeah, I also really enjoy these episodes. It's really, I've tried to kind of scale back on the amount of time that we do power rankings because they get stale, right? But I'd rather take power rankings to be like this moment of information to give to our listeners. And that's why Michael and I tried to say a while back that we wanted to do Deck of the Week more often and like focus in on a deck in that time on the podcast and really take bigger chunks of time to really go over Standard in depth.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's start with the deck coming in fifth place. We have Celestia Midrange. The list I have is the 10th place list from GP New Jersey. But Matt, what did you include in?
So they actually did differentiate between Celestia Midrange and Celestia tokens on the mothership. And it seemed like the biggest difference to me was the inclusion of like Adanto Vanguard and... Yeah, it's just like a slightly bigger deck. It doesn't play like Amara. So like the Amara deck would fall under tokens, and like the Adanto Vanguard decks mostly fall under midrange, it seems.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a deck that I talked about with Quentin, who was at my house on Sunday as these GPs were unfolding. And one of the cool things that I like about the 10th place list is on Sarah's Wings with Adanto Vanguard and with Carnage Tyrant. What do you guys think is like the... What do you think of this configuration of the deck versus some of the other ones? And like, where do you think that this deck is finding its foothold in the format kind of sits?
This deck is super sweet. Michael and I talked about this deck right after it got posted. And I would like to see it go a little bit harder on some of these things. Like the numbers seem a little out of place to me. I kind of want to just, I really just want to play four Vinemares if I'm being honest.
In Sarah's Wings and stuff like that?
Yeah, just see how far I can push it. I mean, the other list actually did have three on Sarah's Wings. There were two people playing, like, 70 of three of the same 75.
Sure.
But yeah, I kind of want to just, like, push that angle. Vinemare seems really good to me right now, especially if I'm playing, you know, seven Mana Dorks.
Yeah, the number of Mana Dorks to train, like, get out your Vivian Reeds faster, get out your Carnage Tyrants faster... in this deck is pretty cool. And then because it gets to play Flower Flourish, it makes them not dead. which is pretty cool that you don't get that out of the black-green decks, because some of the black-green decks have tried to do the same thing, right? They go play Druid of the Cal and Llanowar Elves a little bit more, but they don't have Flower Flourish to like make those things relevant later, Michael.
Yeah, March of the Multitudes as well is on sort of a mana sink, and then an end of turn march into a Flower Flourish is really powerful. One of the things I really like about this iteration compared to some of the other green-white decks that also did well this weekend, which I'm not really sure where they're classified, but like the Path of Discovery, like Wild Growth Walker style, which I think both Matt and Venue played
those ones fallen under mid-range.
Yeah, so they're kind of halfway between mid and tokens, but what I like about this one in particular is how little it cares about Takatli Honor Guard. Like, in fact, you can actually play Takatli Honor Guard in your green-white deck when you build it this way, at least as a sideboard card.
Absolutely. And,
I think that not getting, like, splash damage from Angels on that half is pretty sweet. I also think that this deck doesn't really care about Lyra that much, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It seems like, I mean, Carnage Tyrant has really proven itself to be pretty good in the metagame right now. A lot of the green-black decks are also moving that way. And, you know, between Vivian Reed and Karn, you're really adept at playing the card advantage game as well. So
which version, you guys leaning on this version too, then, over the other one?
Well, I'm always, you know, mostly against any deck playing Jade Light Rangers, so I would probably lean towards this one.
Michael?
Yeah, I think that might be true. The one interaction that is really incredible is Path of Discovery and Tristani Discordant. Like, if you ever have a Wild Growth Walker in play, I assume your opponent just loses the game if they're trying to attack you and you make that play. Additionally, I think the other deck is a better March of the Multitudes deck. And again, like casting March of the Multitudes with a Path of Discovery in play feels like it's probably going to be mostly the end of the game every time.
Yeah, I had that happen against me. I don't know if it was on stream. Sometime this week, I had that exact thing happen to me, March of the Multitude with Path in play.
I also like that not playing any Planeswalkers allows you to play the Immortal Sun. That being said, one of the things I like about... This is weird to say about the deck playing on Sarah's Wings, but I think it's actually substantially less linear than the more tokens-y builds.
I think so, too. I think this deck can just kind of play like a mid-range game plan, kind of rampy mid-range that other deck can't do.
And so there are some cool things about that. Like, I think you can kind of be all over the place a little bit in terms of what you're doing, and it's very hard to put you on specific cards, and, like, you know, these lists were playing a couple of Settle the Wreckages, and, like, March of the Multitudes in a shell that doesn't necessarily look like a March of the Multitudes shell. But the flip side is that they also look perhaps a little unfocused, like treasure maps and like seal aways, and like it's kind of wishy-washy and all over the place. So I'm not sure what's better, but I certainly do want to on Sarah's Wings a Carnage Tyrant, and if you don't, you're lying.
Well, let's talk about Boros Angels next, guys. So I'm a little shocked, Matt. So here's the thing, is I actually think that like Brad Nelson's list, I mean, I'm never going to basically question Brad Nelson when it comes to Standard. So if Brad's top hitting with his deck, it means it's probably like actually pretty good. And I like basically his entire list other than the Rispended Angels. Like, if those were just Militia Buglers, I would be like literally in love with this.
There's almost no way you could play Militia Bugler in this deck.
Why is that?
Because you only have like 13 hits, or you'd have 19 hits.
Well, they can hit themselves, right?
Yeah, that would be 19.
How many do you need in a Militia Bugler deck?
No, it would be 15. Or Dawnbringer. Yeah, you need like 20 a couple, and then when you're playing Takatli Honor Guards in the main deck, I think that, you know,
you need even more.
I mean, I just don't really want to play the Takatli Honor Guard Militia Bugler.
Oh,
deck.
That makes sense. Okay, because right. It hits on yourself. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, I completely changed my mind. I learned something this week on the episode. This was great. Thank you. I was like, it gets Honor Guard, but I didn't realize Honor Guard gets me. That makes a lot more sense.
I do think like that could be a sideboard pack. I think you can sideboard Tikotlic Honor Guards and potentially keep Militia Buglers in the deck in matchups where Tikotlic Honor Guard is insane. But it's super awkward, like, if you're supposed to be the beat down in a matchup to have them both in your deck, because
it looks like
Tikotlic Honor Guard is like a thing that attacks sometimes.
It honestly looks like, I don't know this, I haven't talked to Brad, I haven't read an article on this, but it honestly looks like that's kind of what he's doing with Direfleet Daredevil in the sideboard, having it as a 4-of that he can switch out for the 4 Tikotlic Honor Guards.
Yeah, I'm skeptical of that being great, but I understand that when Tikotlic Honor Guard is bad, it's just actually a blank, so...
Yeah, and you're mostly going to side out the Honor Guards when you're bringing in the Daredevils, right, for a lot of the same reasons, like it's an ETB, so...
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right, I assume it's just, like, actually a one-for-one swap.
Yeah. So, So now that I've learned something about this deck and why you can't build it the way I want to build it, why don't you guys talk to me about it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten a chance to play the Boros Angels decks, mostly because Michael told me they were bad. Like, I was like, oh, man, this Boros Angels deck seems really sweet. I like a lot of where this deck's going, and he's like... No, it's bad. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then we played the Boros Mentor deck, and it was great. And
so Boros Mentor is not included in these rankings, then?
It is not. No, Boros Mentor and Boros Angels were considered different decks for the purposes of these power rankings. Boros Mentor would have been the 6th place deck, and I think it was probably the least represented deck in the top 6 by a significant margin. So some food for thought there.
Which one of the decks do you guys like better? I mean, we're questioning Brad Nelson here.
I mean, I like the Boros Mentor deck better, but I think that in the heads-up matchup, this deck is going to crush it, so.
I think that's true, but I think that ultimately, like, I really don't like basically punting to Jeskai, and this deck is just punting to Jeskai.
It certainly is.
Why do you say that?
I mean, you're playing a main deck 1-3. You're, like, not really an aggro deck. Basically, I can't imagine how you ever win a game that doesn't involve you playing an Edonto Vanguard on 2.
Yeah, I mean, History of Benalia doesn't really help you a ton if you don't have something before it against control decks in this format. So, I think you're right.
This deck also has exactly 0 other knights, so you never, like, get to curve Knight of Grace into it. I think, realistically, just playing, like, a vanilla 1-3 in your main deck, that plan is to replace it with mostly a vanilla 2-1 is, I don't think it's hard to explain why that's not great.
Yeah, it doesn't look to me like he actually thought that the Jeskai matchup was winnable, even with the sideboard, so he didn't really include anything to try to beat it. Which makes sense. Like, if I look at a sideboard and I see 0 cards for control, I'm usually assuming that they either think the matchup is insanely great or insanely bad. And it's hard for me to believe that he thinks that this matchup's insanely good.
My other worry with this deck is that I think this deck actually has a very poor black-green matchup if you don't main deck 4 Tikotlic Honor Guards. So my fear going forward is that you're either going to end up with less black-green, period, or you're going to end up with black-green decks that Tikotlic Honor Guard isn't as good against. And I think this is the kind of deck that...
Or even just those Selesnya decks, right? Like...
I think it makes a lot of sense as like a weak deck, but I don't think this is like, there's no way that 4 weeks from now it's correct to be playing 4 main deck to Tikotlic Honor Guards. There's no way.
Well, and for what it's worth, I think that's a good point. I think that Brad Nelson often ends up building his decks for that specific week. So I wouldn't even say that we're saying that he was wrong to do any of this when we're giving criticisms on the deck, just saying that it's not something I would do going forward.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's what I'm saying too. Like, great deck to play last Saturday, bad deck to play this Saturday.
Right.
All right. Well, let's go on to the next deck in our rankings. It got 18 points. We have Is It Phoenix coming in this week. This is a deck that people have been talking about, and looks like there's a couple different ways to build it. The list that I have is the 6th place list from New Jersey up.
Yeah, it's there are definitely a couple of different ways to build it. It seems like the biggest difference right now is whether you play Warlord's Furies and Crash Throughs, or whether you're playing Goblin Electromancers and
radical ideas.
Yeah, radical ideas, right?
Yeah. So yeah. That's kind of the split. There are probably arguments for both. I don't know that Matt and I just finished playing a league with the Electromancer radical idea list, and
it's 12.
It definitely does. It does some powerful things.
Yeah. On the other side, is 12 cantrips like important for the deck? I haven't played games with Arclight Phoenix yet, but you know, I played a lot of games with Crackling Drake, and they already get pretty massive.
Yeah, the Crackling Drakes, and I mean the Enigma Drakes are just insane in this deck. If I was ranking the creatures from best to worst, Enigma Drake would be the best, which is surprising to me. I didn't expect that going in. Arclight Phoenix is probably the worst, which is also surprising to me. I really didn't expect that going in. But yeah, it's. I think the cantrips are very important. You don't necessarily need to return a Arclight Phoenixes right away, but it is nice to have the option to do so. Like, we had plenty of games where we had the option to either return an Arclight Phoenix or play a Crackling Drake or an Enigma Drake or whatever, and chose to play the Drake instead. But it, definitely having the options is important.
It depends a lot on what you're... Like, we didn't play that much against Black-Green. I would imagine against Black-Green, a lot of the time you're returning Arclight Phoenix just because even if they kill it, it's, like, kind of free. Plus, it's really good at killing Planeswalkers.
Sure.
So my guess is that Arclight Phoenix is, like, pretty insane if your opponent doesn't have specifically a bunch of exiling removal or the game isn't...
Yeah, I've seen a lot of Black-Green players talking about just playing, like... having to play more Verasca's Contempt because of Phoenix, even because of Drake, just because of flying creatures that you kind of just want gone forever.
Right.
The flip side being that obviously Verasca's Contempt is pretty exploitable from, you know, this side. There's a dive down in the main deck of the Grand Prix Lil.
Yeah, and there's dive downs in the sideboard of the one from New Jersey also, so...
Yeah, so a lot of the time, like, what we were finding is that against Black-Green, you were able to sort of kill enough creatures to not get run over on the ground, and then you could sort of just have these massive, you know, attack you for 15 kind of turns in the air.
Well, and that's another reason why I like going for the Electromancer list too, right? Like, if people are very interested in bringing in things like Verasca's Contempt against you, the 4-mana removal spells are just not a great answer for Goblin Electromancer, and you can accrue so much value by the time they are able to contempt it, if they are able to contempt it at all.
Yeah, the biggest innovation, I think, from kind of this week compared to the lists I was seeing before is the basically Lamenting Voice, which I think just having like another draw to is really critical. I think lists were mostly playing more Lava Coils in that slot last week, but I think the increase in velocity... We played a lot of games where I felt like we were like behind on board, behind on board, behind on board, kill you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's mostly how I've lost to this deck, is those same play patterns on Arena. So what do you guys think about maximum velocity or not? It sounds like you guys are more on the Goblin Electromancer list, probably not going to be ending up playing that.
No, we were playing to maximize velocities. That card's great. I am definitely interested in having it at least as a one of. The cost is just pretty low because you can discard it to things like Trotacorus and Tormenting Voice.
And then just flash it back.
And yeah, it makes it to where your opponent has to play awkwardly if you have one in the graveyard. And if you have one in your hand instead, it just often makes it to where your opponent doesn't see it coming and loses the game.
Yeah, I really liked that, like, I think we were playing against one in the mirror. And it gets to the point where, like, if the game just drags out enough, if neither player can kill each other, Green Black deck has to respect the fact that, you know, if you're able to, like, end step, discard an Arclight Phoenix to Radical Idea, untap, you know, opt Crackling Drake, opt
get my
Crackling Drake haste. Yeah. Your opponent's just like, well, I'm taking like 18.
Yeah.
And there's something to just having like the kill you as an out is just really powerful.
Yeah. And again, like I said, the opportunity cost is just very low in this deck compared to other decks.
Yeah, especially in the version with Radical Ideas, you have 12 ways plus a Beacon Bolt to discard cards. It just was not an issue for us, basically, at all. Like, you probably don't want two ever, but the first one's very good.
How has Radical Idea been for you guys?
It's really good with the Electrodancer in play. I mean, it's kind of a medium card overall. It's medium to bad, honestly, but it was serviceable. And with an Electrodancer in play, it really leads to some broken turns.
The worst fine card.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the kind of thing that, like, you're never like, oh man, radical idea, that's so good. But rarely are you like, oh man, radical idea, that's, you know, it cycles.
One of the things that I was telling people this week in the Facebook group was just like how so many decks have bad cards in them in this format. We're like, that's not a good Magic card. Like, and that's kind of the fun of this format, is like kind of figuring out like what's good enough.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun that we don't have a lot of like pure mid-range good stuff decks. Like, this deck is, you know, complete nonsense. All of the green-white decks really look like, all of the non like Emara green-white decks look like complete nonsense to me. Even the green-black decks are like often disturbingly Wild Growth Walker centric. Yeah. There's just like a lot of weird stuff going on in this format that's, you know, it's very five set standard, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah, the decks have become very synergistic, I think, to compensate for the fact that the cards individually aren't very powerful. So you kind of try to, you know, ball up a bunch of stuff that kind of does something together.
I mean, I don't know if anyone saw the mono red deck in the finals, or I think it was the semifinals of the French GP. But
I think it won.
Well, it did, but
but playing in the semifinals, he's playing against Javier Dominguez, and like, he basically just like full comboed him out with triple treasure map, double experimental frenzy, and a bunch of steamkins. It was like, it didn't resemble, if someone had told you it was like, you know, it was like half mono red, half modern ad nauseum.
Yeah. Yeah, the deck does kind of feel like that, though, sometimes, the mono-red deck.
Yeah, it was like storm than aggro.
It's funny, because that's one of the things about this format, right? Like, you look at this Arc-like Phoenix deck, and you have, you just kind of have this amazing one card that you're building around, right? And it doesn't even turn out to be that good. Like, might just put it as the worst creature in the deck.
Well, I would say this deck is built around Enigma Drake. That card's great. Enigma Drake is broken somehow.
Well, Arclight Phoenix is the worst creature in the deck unless you draw two, and then it's the best creature.
And then you're just like, boom. Yeah. And it's kind of funny because you know, the same thing is true in the mono red deck. Like, the cards are mostly bad until you have Experimental Frenzy and Steamkin in play, and then you're just like, well, I don't know how you beat this, but good luck.
Yeah. You don't even come close. You just get like a bit steamrolled. If you actually have Steamkin and Frenzy going at the same time, I don't know what's supposed to be good against that, but nothing I've ever found.
Yeah. So, what the Izzet deck? It's good against black green, right? Like, I've lost to it a couple of times now. I know that people are touting it as being good against black green. You guys didn't play against black green, but we all figured that.
We did once. Yeah. My inclination, and I think this was Matt's too, is that the deck is really good against Golgari and Jeskai, and absolutely miserable against the card Odonto Vanguard.
Yeah.
That makes some sense. Well, let's.
Yeah, it's just it's just True Name Nemesis, except it only costs two.
This deck literally can't beat an Odonto Vanguard with Onslaught's Wings on it. So
there are certainly a lot of decks right now that fold to Odonto Vanguard. It's surprising, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, even Jeskai, like, even Seal Away doesn't actually beat an Odonto Vanguard with an Onzera's Wings.
Oh, no, it doesn't. They're like, oh, why does this have Vigilance? Yeah, yeah. So
that kind of.
It's interesting. I hadn't considered that before.
Let's talk about Golgari really quickly, though. So this comes in with 32 points, so a pretty big jump in points. Probably the most deck played this weekend by a pretty substantial margin. What are you guys thinking about black green right now, and where it sits, and what it's doing, and which versions are correct?
So I think black green is a totally reasonable deck, and will continue to be that. If anything, it's probably going to get better in the next month or so as people stop targeting it as much. I think this week in particular was probably the worst deck to play black green, or the worst week to play black green, and it still put up pretty reasonable results.
Yeah, I think it's just a good deck. I really like the list that took third place in the French GP. I know Michael had talked about some of, you know, playing God, Elvish Rejuvenator, stuff like that. There's just a lot of things that I really like in this list, but it does play Jade Light Ranger, guys.
That's the hill I'm going to die on. Elvish Rejuvenator is not a playable magic card.
Yeah, I really like
it.
The,
I've said it 4 or 5 times on this podcast. I'm going down with that one.
I like the 12th place list from the French GP a lot, actually, which is 4 Llanowar Elves, 4 Druid of the Cowl, 4 Carnage,
too, yeah.
And 4 Find Finality. Along with 3 Sideboard Ritual of Soot. This is a guy who knows what he's trying to do. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I like that there's so many different ways to build the deck. You know, I personally, the success that I've had the most with, I think, is just lists that have Wild Growth Walker in the main. You know, being able to grind out value while making a large threat and also making something too big for the aggro decks to beat. I mean, I've had Wild Growth Walker be like a wall against Celestian tokens for the most part, too. So it's kind of overperformed for me.
Yeah, Wild Growth Walker is definitely the king if your opponent's trying to attack you.
Yeah, it's like a pretty bad card. I think the actual cost is mostly that it forces you to play Seeker Squire.
Yeah, that's kind of the worst part.
I think it's like
a lot
worse than Druid of the Cowl. But I think that for better or worse, like, it's really hard to say anything like unequivocal about Black Rain.
No, it's hard. It's impossible.
You just, you know, it's like we look at like 5 different lists, and I mean, they play a lot of the same cards, right? Like, we're all going to play some Jade Light Rangers, and we're all going to play probably some Vivian Reads, but beyond that, it's just like, you know.
Yeah, it really feels like the Vivian Reed Ravenous Chupacabra show, huh? Like, those are like the ones that are pretty constant.
Yeah, I mean,
those and Merfolk Branchwalker are probably the only Sacred Cows.
Right.
Yeah. And Merfolk Branchwalker sucks. It's just that the twos really suck.
Right, yeah. This format in general, I've found, is really strapped at the 2-drop spot.
Which is one of the reasons why, you know, people finding, you know, I just like, oh, actually, Adante of Vanguard is like totally playable in this format, actually, because the twos are bad.
Yeah,
so
not only playable,
for what it's worth, the reason that I really like the 12th place list, which is Christian Hauk's list, is that it looks incredibly strong to me against both Adante Vanguard and Tokatli Honor Guard.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about that a little bit with the green white deck, but that's the Karn list, right?
It's 2 Karns, 3 Vivians, but it's just like 8 mana dorks, 4 sweepers, 2 contempts, and a trophy. So just like kind of a lot of spot removal. The sweepers will clean up, you know, any amount of Tikali Honor Guards that are happening to you.
Find Finality gets a lot better in your deck when you're playing Druid of the Cow, weirdly enough. Like, the number of times that I...
4 Carnage Tyrants, right? Like, I know what I want to cast before I cast the Find Finality, and it's a Carnage Tyrant, so
sure,
I'm going to play 4.
That's true, too. But being able to get that out quickly with the Druid of the Cowl on either side is actually really powerful. So, anything that you guys, you know, feel like this deck struggles against?
I mean, it really depends on the version. It seems like they pretty thematically struggle against flyers, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, they're relying on their ground creatures to be able to make some blocks a lot of the times.
I would say they struggle against flyers, and they struggle against things that go really wide, just because Find Finality is a sweeper, but it's kind of a slow one, and if you play like a removal spell on a mana dork in the meantime, I've had a lot of success against Black Green with like various things, including Heroic Reinforcements and History of Benalia.
I typically find that your problems against flyers are usually the second flyer. You know, the first one's pretty easy to deal with. It's the second one that is just like, oh man, I have to deal with another one. Like,
well, it depends on if the flyer is like 12 power too, right? I mean, that's the thing that the Drake deck is good at. It's good at like,
well, I think
you
the
know,
Phoenixes
every
are
flyer
just
is going to kill
this deck.
To attack.
I think Phoenix is just as good against this deck as the Drakes are.
Arclight or Rekindling?
Rekindling Phoenix.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
The one thing I would say is that card can kind of get raced by a Carnage Tyrant, whereas something like Enigma Drake, it's, you know...
Yeah, absolutely.
Pray you can kill it, because it will... like, your Carnage Tyrant is going to be smaller than their Enigma Drake.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yep.
So the number one deck that we have that is Jeskai Control. I have the 8th place list from Grand Prix New Jersey up. You know, it seems like there's... a rift, guys. Somebody's playing a lot of Jeskai right now. Am I supposed to be playing Opt?
It makes more sense to me in decks that have Crackling Drake.
Yeah, so that's the only way that I would play it. You have to be playing Crackling Drake. But it's a weird one to me to be in these decks.
I appreciate that we've got this list pulled up, and the card that you're going to criticize out of this list is Opt.
Yeah, that's the one that I want to talk about. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about the fact that people have decided that it's okay to main deck 4 Revitalize.
I was going to talk about the fact that they're not Planeswalkers, and one of them is in a Teferi.
Well,
yeah, it's true. There is a split on Teferi at 5 mana Planeswalkers in this deck. That's another good point.
Yeah,
I just want to talk about Opt for a second. We can get to everything else.
Yeah, I mean the other.
So lists... to be fair, I think that lots of the lists that are playing Opt are playing Revitalize, Matt.
Sure, I would say that it's basically I'm 0% to play Opt without Crackling Drake. With it, it's probably fine. You just kind of want the velocity, and it makes sense to me. I'm not sure that it's the best card necessarily in that slot, but I think it's not a very big cost.
So this is my favorite deck in Standard right now, mostly just because I really enjoy Teferi decks. I think they're super fun. But this deck, kind of like Black Green, has tons of different builds going on.
Yeah, this one looks like it did probably not as well as the Azor's Gateway theme deck that won New Jersey, put a second in that. Well, no, I guess that had a Drake deck as well. They're split into two, and I can't figure out why on MTG Goldfish.
The same thing is true of the Phoenix decks as well.
Yeah, that they're split into two with seemingly... No, but first and ninth were both the same at New Jersey, and they were both like playing for Azor's Gateway, like the PTQ list for Expansion Explosion, and I think both played a main deck Star of Extinction too, which
yeah,
I just like on a, you know, this is really cool level.
Personally, I've been leaning more on white sweepers in this deck over the past couple weeks because people are playing so many more Carnage Tyrants. That's what I like to do in this deck right now.
Yeah, I mean, Star of Extinction is totally reasonable at taking out a Carnage Tyrant as well, but it does cost like 100 mana, so.
I mean, so does Carnage Tyrant, right? Like,
it's true.
The sliding scale of what things cost, like, you know, once you get to 6, it's just out of this world, I guess.
I mean, my thought is that, like, if your opponent ramps out a Carnage Tyrant and you don't have a settle, you know, you might die to it, but Star of Extinction can also like kill a Memorial to Folly in the same swing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's true. What I was gonna say though is that I actually do really like Settle the Wreckage specifically because of the fact that they are running so much recursion. Like,
yeah, I mean,
obviously you could take out the Memorial to Folly with the Star, but like they also have Fine Brokers oftentimes and other things of that nature.
Yeah, one of the things that I like about playing Azor's Gateway specifically is that against Black-Green, it gives you sort of a definitive endgame. Like, when you put 4 Expansion Explosion and 4 Azor's Gateway in your deck, you have a plan.
Yeah, I got a chance to play that matchup, and you don't need the Azor's Gateways. Expansion Explosion by itself in multiples was just easily enough to end the game no matter what stage we were at.
Sure.
Like yeah, just that Explosion for 4, Explosion for 5, Explosion for 6 was like just the end of every game.
Sure, you could basically just Sphinx's Rev them out of the game.
Yeah, but, it felt exactly like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think that I've found myself chaining Explosions more often in this deck than I expected to. I honestly, sometimes I worry that I'm going to deck myself before I kill them.
You can target them with both if you want to.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, I should do that more often.
You have to be a little careful, right? Because, like, you know, you don't want to be like, draw 10, also go.
Yeah. I'll deal you 10, but also, congratulations, you won the game. So, Matt, you've also been liking this deck. What do you like it against?
So
which version do you like?
So, I definitely like the Drake version. Actually, so I'm looking right now at the fifth place list from the European GP. I assume that's in Europe. And it has 4 Crackling Drakes in it and a Niv-Mizzet, and I think that's a pretty good way to go right now. I like having a shorter term win condition, I guess, would be the best way to put it, because there are so many threats that are just going to outclass you in the late game, unfortunately. Like, Teferi just doesn't do the job he used to.
I was saying that earlier. I wondered if it was just me or if other people are like, man, why is Teferi like so much worse than this deck? It's still great, but it is a lot worse than it was.
Well, the thing is,
like playing the Drake deck against this deck, our opponent resolved like four Teferis in the same game and got smashed.
Yeah. I've definitely done that with this deck.
The thing is, cards like Niv-Mizzet, Banefire, Carnage Tyrant, like, they're just really gunning for control right now, and it makes it really hard. And I realize you can play Niv-Mizzet in control, but if you ever try to play Jeskai against a Niv-Mizzet, it's just like, we played specifically the GP winning list, and Quentin and I were playing this, and we played against the blue-red Arclight Phoenix deck, and he just like played a Niv-Mizzet on 7 and then never attacked with it, and it was just like, it was unbeatable. Like, it felt like our opponent won the game and the win condition was hit his 6th land. there were not cards in the deck that could beat it. There were Teferis that could theoretically tuck it, but then it just comes back in 2 turns and like you still don't have a way to counter it.
the game that we just played a few minutes ago was kind of the same. I think it got tucked 3 times.
What's that?
Does the deck not have Justice Strike?
No, it does not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you probably have to find a way to kill Niv-Mizzet and, you know, other hard to deal with threats.
I don't think that there was a way to kill a Niv-Mizzet in the 75.
Yeah, that's something to think about.
So,
the flip side being that Justice Strike is absolutely abysmal against Boros.
Yeah, it's
so
pretty bad.
You know, it's trade-offs either way. Just something to be aware of. I think you might want like an Ixalan's Binding or something like that style of effect in your deck against some of these Arclight Phoenix or Drake decks, but it's tough.
I've had one, you basically have
to settle.
Yeah, I've had one Ixalan's Binding in my 75 for the last couple of weeks, and I really like it. I'm with Matt. I think that the Drake version is a little bit better. Maybe I'll give Niv-Mizzet another try. I really haven't liked it in the times that it's been cast against me and the couple times that I cast it. But I could put it back in my deck and try it out. That's something that I'm willing to concede to. I mean, it's got 1,000 text on it. It's something I want to be good, so I'm happy to try it out again.
Yeah, I definitely wrote that card off on the spoilers, but it's so much better than I thought it was.
Yeah,
it's bad against green black, but if you ever untap with it, you can't lose.
So where do you think...
You're just 100-0.
Where do you think that this format sits? Like, Michael, you're going to the Pro Tour. Where are you at, man?
Well, I think that the Jeskai decks are good, but I also don't know that I can get to a spot that I'm happy with, like, an exact 75. I'd rather do something a little bit more proactive, I think. I am a pretty big fan of the, like, Boros decks that are maybe going a little bit less hard on beating green. I don't really want to play main deck to Kotli Honor Guards. I'd sideboard some, but probably not 4 in the main deck. That's a little too much. I think for the same reason, I would have to have a build of green black that was a little bit less explore centric to be comfortable with it.
Sure. I played against one today that had main deck Reclamation Sage. It had Glow Spore Shamans. It actually was quite good.
Sure, we're just on the now none of our creatures do anything against the Kotli Honor Guard plan. Like, none of our cards have any text against that card.
Hey, I'm just saying.
I'm not saying the cards aren't powerful. I'm just saying you're going to play at least one match against someone maining 4 to Kotli Honor Guards. And if that sounds like a bad time to you, I think that's a reason to consider not playing like the stock green black list.
It also played Vicious Offering, which was sweet.
Sure, that's a way we can 2-for-1 ourselves to avoid getting Infinity for 1. That seems good.
I'm just saying the deck did a lot of cool things. I was just throwing that out there for you.
So I like the Boros decks in kind of every iteration, but I'm not a huge fan of Lyra in this format. And I like the Arclight Phoenix decks, but like not having a way to ever beat an Odonto Vanguard seems kind of poor. So I have a few ideas related to that, but I haven't tried them yet. So we will see.
So one of the things I like to talk about really quick is just that Lyra comment, because I also have been feeling the same way about Lyra recently. It seems like everybody has an answer for her, and Green-Black is just like they just want you to play a Lyra so that they can slam a Flame Tongue Kabu to get it. Like, it's like their favorite.
I mean, obviously Lyra's really powerful, but it dies to more than Aurelia does. I don't think it creates the same kind of impact immediately that Aurelia does. It costs them more mana than Aurelia.
Yeah.
Lyra,
you can't call it Siege Rhino.
Well, I think Aurelia is like closer to that than you might think.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying like that's the benefit of playing Aurelia is you get to call it Siege Rhino. So, Matt, what about you? Like, I know you're not qualified for this Pro Tour, but like, where are you at in Standard?
Yeah, it mostly like the Boros Mentor deck still. I'm looking at the list that took third place right now in New Jersey, and he had some spicy ideas about what was going on here. It's got like a Miser's Tikali Honor Guard in the main deck and a Miser's Bounty Agent. I'll, you know, wait while you guys look that card up.
I actually like the some of this stuff that's going on. I think the actual cards that I don't like in this deck are Todrick and Swiftblade Vindicator.
Sure.
I'm like a lot less interested in calling my deck Boros Mentor and a lot more interested in like playing good red and white cards, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I actually just really don't like Swiftblade Vindicator.
I'm surprised that he's playing it over Boros Challenger. That seems...
Pretty sure that Bounty Agent is kind of great.
What do you like it against? I was gonna ask you where you think that card
Lyra
shines. I mean, yeah, it's going to be good against Lyra specifically, but, I mean, he's already got other answers for Lyra.
I mean, it's nice that it just eats it. I think it's cool that you can get it with a Militia Bugler.
I need more than just Lyra to main deck a 2-2 for 2, right?
I mean, he's main decking a bunch of 1-1s for 2.
I agree.
I mean, I think we all don't like the Swiftblade Vindicators.
Saying that he doesn't need better reasons than that. I'm saying I do.
Yeah, I mean, the actual reason I don't like Swiftblade Vindicator is because it, like, his curve is kind of okay, but it's like the... What I will say is this. I guarantee you if you run hot with this deck, you'll never lose. Because you have so many different things you could hypothetically draw that if you just are, like, Vampiric Tutoring in your upkeep every turn, your draw steps are going to be great.
Yeah, I think that the Swiftblade Vindicators actually do make me want to play the Tajax a little bit more. I think you actually do need more
three mana
Mentor.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, he's also playing like the full like three war bosses plus three. Like, he actually does have a lot of Mentor stuff. The question is just whether or not Swiftblade Vindicator is worth it. I think that the way he's built his deck, it's like pretty weak for no real reason to Goblin Chain.
Yeah, I mean, not like that card's seeing like a ton of play right now, but
it won the French GP, right? Like, I'm not saying I think Goblin Shamer was the best card in this format, just that, like, you know, if I can avoid it being a disaster for me, I may as well.
Do you want to guess how many copies were in the top 32 of GP New Jersey?
Zero.
Zero. Do you want to guess how many were in the top 32 outside of the first place list in GP Lille?
Zero.
Yes.
Four.
It was zero.
I had Nick Lassen come at me about that mono red deck. He like
oh no,
got,
I'm sorry. There was actually one in the there was one in the top 32.
He came at me because I said that the deck was one of the actual bad decks in the format. Because I said that all the decks in this format are bad, but I mostly am not worried about my deck being weak to Goblin Chainwhirler right now.
So I'm not necessarily like worried about it, but I'm not gonna like go out of my way to play the deck that looks like every creature dies to it.
I think Legion's Landing is the one that's like a little bit of overkill, right?
Well, I think it's hard to flip in this deck. I think this deck is just kind of all over the place. It has some powerful cards, and I think when you play 100 one-ofs and things, you just have like a way higher ceiling than if you, you know, play all four-ofs. But
I mean, the deck that I think that actually folds to Goblin Chain Whirler is the matchup that he got in the finals, which is the mono blue deck. Just like, oh my god.
Yeah, like, you don't actually play very many Essence Scatters in that deck. So for me right now, I'm liking I'm actually liking two decks. One of them is Jeskai Control. It's the deck that I would be playing. And then the second one is actually the mono blue deck. I don't know. It just reminds me of Prorok. I've really been enjoying it. It's a lot better than I thought it was. Because I thought it was just garbage, unplayable crap, and it's not that.
Sure.
I mean the mono blue deck, and I think I 5-0'd with that blue black deck, which is basically the mono blue deck.
Right.
And I think put it down because I was struggling with mono red, which I kept playing online. But you know, again, if you're not going to play against Goblin Chain Whirler, most of the tempo decks are pretty playable.
Good. Yeah.
You basically don't want to play against 100 burn spells.
So I was watching Spencer play a game with the mono blue deck on Arena, and we were getting wrecked by a Tecali Honor Guard, and I think our opponent was like a genius.
That was so awkward.
How does that even possible?
Because we had like Merfolk Tricksters that couldn't tap things down, and like a bunch of Exclusion Mages in the deck that weren't doing anything.
Yeah, so you sideboarded in a bunch of Exclusion Mages, and he sideboarded in a bunch of Tecali Honor Guards, and it was so awkward.
Like, we made the terrible mistake of, you know, trying to play Merfolk Trickster, which is the worst card that anyone has ever tried to play.
Hey man, I was just trying out the stuff that did well. The GP.
I'm only saying, if you want to play this deck, you should play the blue black deck instead, because it's probably better.
Well, there you go. All right, well, that's where we're at with Standard. That's where Standard's at. This is a big Standard. Like, for the number of decks that like you could reasonably be playing at this Pro Tour, Michael, it's a little bit bigger than like I expected it would be.
Yeah, I feel like there are probably like four or five like pretty legitimate choices, and that's with me ruling out like two or three good decks.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
Well, if you have any thoughts on the format, please leave a comment on YouTube, or you know, shoot us a comment over at the Constructive Critics Facebook group or Constructive Criticism Family One if you're in there and listening to the podcast, because you know the Standard's sweet. We want to talk about it. Let's wrap this up. So you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. You can find the show at ccmtg on Twitter. You can find me at Spencer13H. You can find Michael at MagicMikeMTG. You can find Matt at the Witch Clink. Thumbs up from Michael. And you can join the conversation on the Constructive Criticism Family on Facebook. If you're a patron, you know, check those rewards. They're gonna be changing soon. But you can get in on that. And yeah, you know, things are going good, guys. Like in the we got Even Odds Pod going on. We got so much stuff going on in the community. It's really fun to watch.
I will only say, for those of you who like haven't liked Standard in the last little while, I was not really a fan of the last format. This format, I've been having a lot of fun. Like, dude, legitimately think there are like a bunch of decks. Level is high enough to be interesting, but low enough that I have basically not felt oppressed by any card except Tecali Honor Guard.
This is which my favorite says standard a lot. In a long time, man. Like, I enjoy tons of the decks. I enjoy green black. I enjoy Jeskai. I enjoy mono blue. I am gonna try this green white deck out. I'm sure I'm gonna enjoy that. I'm sure I would enjoy the five color Lich's Mastery deck. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, being able to play like semi-viable nonsense is a good time.
Yeah,
I think everyone likes that.
I was talking to Matt about a Splinter Twin combo today. Like, you know, the format's wide open.
What? Well, you have to tell me about this so I can win the Pro Tour.
You're in the thread.
Well, no, that's not a Splinter Twin combo. Oh boy,
it's a three card Splinter Twin combo. It's fine.
You calling that a Splinter Twin combo is like offensive, and I don't think I've ever played Splinter Twin.
should we say it on the podcast?
It's Thud plus Enigma.
It's fine.
Not Splinter Twin.
No, you need to go Enigma Drake and then Maximize Velocity and then Thud.
Well, when I Thud someone out of the finals of the Pro Tour,
I don't remember what it was, but it's definitely public domain somewhere.
Well, either way.
Oh, someone 5-0'd with, or won some Japanese tournament with Torgar Thud.
Oh yeah, is, maybe that's what it was. I might have seen it from
the
article.
Oh, is
that
the four mana, the four mana creature that gets giant?
No,
it's way better than that. It's the 11 mana creature, or whatever, that gets cheaper for everything you sacrifice to it, and when it ETBs, someone's life total becomes half of their starting life total, and then it has 9 power, so you thud them, and they're at 1.
It has 7 power. 7-6, right?
Whatever, go to 3, it doesn't matter.
Alright, well, that's it for this week, I guess. What did you learn this week, Matt?
I learned that if you put an On Sarah's Wings on an Adanso Vanguard, you could never lose.
That's what I was telling Quinn! I learned why you can't play a 4 of Tataliana Guard in a deck with 4 Militia Buellers. Not that I wouldn't have gotten there by myself, but these guys sped up the process.
But you might have played a game with it first and had to have it happen to you.
I would have flipped my computer and
you'd have been like, oh,
I'm
man.
So dumb.
Dropping from this league. Yeah. Well, I learned that Spencer is comparing FUD to Splinter Twin, so I'm kind of off it.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you guys all next week. Magic.